Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today. If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Good morning, folks. Just a reminder, we'll be out at Jazz Fest tomorrow, broadcasting from 10 to 1, and we've got a great lineup coming your way out there as well. We had a great time. The Miller folks are hosting us. They have been a great host. We had a wonderful time there, spending time with their folks and all that they do at Jazz Fest. So we look forward to that, and we hope that you can join us. And also, you don't want to forget about getting out to Wednesday at the Square. A concert series at Lafayette Square in the CBD showcases all your favorite local music, emerging artists, food, arts, crafts, open to the public. It's festival time, time to unwind. And tonight at Wednesday at the Square, it starts at 5 p.m., our own Ashley O from our sister station Bayou 95.7. She'll be there to introduce local favorites Eric Lindell with Sun Pie and Friends, presented by Abita Brewing Company, the YLC, and WWL. Can't think of a better way to unwind. YLC leaves nothing to chance. Great food, great drink, great friendship out there. It's just a wonderful venue. Been out there a couple times this year. Had a great time. So try and make it out there and unwind a little bit on this Wednesday afternoon, hump day. We got a great show lined up for you today. New Orleans & Company will spend some time with Kevin Ferguson, New Orleans & Company's Vice President of External Affairs and Membership. We're going to talk about a lot of different things, about local activities, about a nationwide event, National Travel and Tourism Week, what that means. It's next week. We'll talk about the success of Jazz Fest, Zurich Classic, and other things that are going on around the city, as always is the case. At 11, Michael Heck joins us, President and CEO of GNO Inc. And we start out today a little differently because we're going to be at Jazz Fest tomorrow. Usually, Rafael Goyeneche joins us on Thursdays, but he agreed to join us this morning, and we appreciate that accommodation. We've got some interesting things to talk about this morning, and Rafi, thank you so much for the accommodation, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Oh, great. No, glad to be here. Thanks for making the time for us.
So, Rafi, let's start out with something that's going on in the federal system, the Byrd gang federal conviction. What was interesting about this, a lot of the information you provided me, these gangs have this kind of almost legacy effect and impact that even when you begin to dismantle them, for a long time afterwards, there's still connections and tentacles out in the community, so to speak.
Right. So, you know, we've been talking for years about the violent crime rate in the city of New Orleans. And gangs like this are fueling the violent crime rate through the years. So as this gang is successfully arrested and prosecuted, it reduces violent crime. And, you know, we've seen, since this gang was indicted, dramatic decreases in crimes of violence, and in fact, every category of crime is reduced. So we have a finite number of criminals in this community. And a gang like this is responsible for an untold number of not just the crimes of violence, but property crimes as well, and drug crimes. So as these gangs are identified and dismantled, it is reflected in lower crime, not just in New Orleans, but in Jefferson Parish as well. Because gangs like this operate on both sides of the river. So this is something that I think warrants doing a little bit deeper dive to let the community know how significant this case is and why this case has resulted in some of the reductions in crime that we've been experiencing over the last couple of years. So
absolutely, let's jump right into it.
Yeah, so last week, the United States Attorney's Office obtained convictions in three individuals, Funky Williams, Six Bovia, and Dutt Dolman. Those three individuals were found guilty after a 2-week jury trial in federal court of multiple counts of RICO conspiracy, drug trafficking, firearms conspiracy, and violent crime in aid of racketeering murders. Those three individuals were tied to a January 31st, 2017 double murder outside of Edna Carr High School at a basketball game. So that, there's, you know, the West Bank tie. So what that murder was about is a ongoing, long-standing feud between residents of the old Calliope Project and the Magnolia Project. So the Calliope Project gang went by the name of the Ghost Gang. The Magnolia Project gang went by the name of the Byrd Gang, B-Y-R-D. So these convictions represent the second generation of Ghost and Byrd Gang RICO convictions for this group. So as the feds back in the identified the existence of these gangs in the mid-1990s, they were ultimately largely dismantled with a RICO conviction that was concluded in 2017. But here we are in 2021, a few years later, the second generation moved into the shoes of their predecessors and continued the ongoing feud. So this is, you know, a really remarkable case because we're talking about 10 members that were charged with a RICO violation. But leading up to that, the federal authorities, the FBI, the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office, the New Orleans Police Department, and some of their other federal partners began, you know, investigating, continued investigating these two gangs going back to the mid-1990s. And when they indicted these 10 members in 2021, leading up to that, they had indicted and convicted another 30 gang members. Those 30 gang members for various offenses dealing from drug distribution to firearms and things like that, that case, those cases resulted in well over 60 weapons being seized by the federal authorities in all of this. So this case spanned 2 weeks in criminal court. And I mean, not in criminal, in federal court. And the government laid out a very compelling case for the jurors that ultimately returned verdicts that are going to result in the three members that went to trial facing mandatory life sentences. So let me give you a little background. So this began to emerge with a very notorious name, Telly Hankton. I mean, you were the sheriff in Jefferson Parish, yep. And you're familiar with who he was.
Well, everyone was.
Of course. So, you know, this is a continuation of the Hankton organization from the mid-90s. And, you know, while we don't have highly organized gangs, we have these neighborhood gangs. But the Ghost Gang and the Bird Gang, a.k.a. the Calliope and Magnolia Projects, they're some of the most notorious, most violent, and, you know, deeply rooted in the culture of those housing projects, former housing projects. So this has been a continuing thorn in the side of law enforcement attempting to, you know, address violent crime in the city and throughout the region. So this group in 2009, the Bird Gang, was responsible for a Mardi Gras Day shootout in which 7 bystanders were wounded, including a baby. The Bird Gang also goes by the name of the 3NG, which means the 3rd Ward North Galvez Gang. So there's a bunch of different names that they are go by that are synonymous. Magnolia also goes by the M3 Gang, which is a reference to the fact the M stands for Magnolia, the 3 stands for the 3rd Ward. So all of these are tied to territories. And these two competing territories, anytime they encounter each other, are violent crimes that are blowing up on the, you know, in and around the city of New Orleans. And they're not just opening fire when their adversaries are isolated and available to them. If they encounter them on the streets, like at Mardi Gras time, they're going to open fire, and most of the victims are going to be innocent bystanders. So, you know, you're looking at, you know, individuals that really don't care if there is collateral damage involved. They're just looking for shock and awe. They're looking to retaliate, and they really don't care who gets in the way of their acts of retaliation. And this is, these gangs are involved in drug trafficking, but there's also a point of pride in being associated with these gangs. And these gangs, in many ways, celebrate their successes with rap artists that are associated with each gang. So the federal government, when they prosecuted this case, were able to tie together some of the songs, some of that were released by rap artists bragging about the accomplishments of the Magnolia Gang and the Calliope Gang. And they were also able to use social media posts. This case was built on multiple wiretaps that linked together all of this activity. We had, you know, the 2017 Edna Carr high school double homicide. As I pointed out, that was at a basketball game. So one of the Ghost Gang members, when they arrived at the basketball game, a Bird Gang associate, Brianna Love, noticed them and called up her associates with the Bird Gang saying, one of our targets is at the basketball game. They came to the basketball game and gunned him down outside of the basketball game. So these murders, you know, are all tied together in this case. They also documented the links between that murder that occurred at Edna Carr in January with a mass shooting on Magazine Street in August of the same year, 2017, where 3 members of the Bird Gang were involved in a shootout on Magazine Street that left 2 men wounded. The shooters were identified as gang members by their Twitter accounts, so they were bragging about what they did in broad daylight on Magazine Street in August of 2017. So they were indicted. 10 members of the Berg gang were indicted in 2021. And as I said, that was based on years worth of work. This is the second generation of gang members that have been prosecuted and convicted from these two associations. In fact, one of the murder victims is serving a life sentence from the earlier conviction for committing a murder in retaliation. So, you know, this is the second generation of family members, fathers and sons, that are out there committing carnage, not just in the city of New Orleans, but in Jefferson Parish, too. So there were, as I pointed out, 10 individuals that were indicted on RICO charges. 7 of them cut deals and pled guilty. One of the leaders of the Berg gang, T-Mile Jackson, who was shot and is now confined to a wheelchair, ended up pleading guilty to these crimes and received a 10-year sentence. You had Samuel Morton, another member of the 10 people that were indicted. He pled guilty and got 18 years. Chance Skipper, another member of that group of 10, accepted a deal and got 7 years. And many of those individuals became cooperating federal witnesses in this case. So you had members of the Calliope gang and some other people from the Berg gang that took deals and agreed to cooperate with the government. So the last 3 that didn't plead guilty, they were successfully prosecuted, as I pointed out. They're all facing mandatory life sentences, and they're scheduled to be formally sentenced on July 30th of this year.
And I'm sure people are asking, Rafi, why did this take so long? Arrest being made in, you know, 2017, 2018, and here we are in 2025. And, you know, the simple answer, I guess, is penetrating these gangs and trying to figure out who the trigger man was, this, that, or otherwise, separate and apart from what you see on social media. You don't want to run the risk of that being the only piece of evidence that you have, so you start to break down the individuals that you have under arrest to see if they'll ultimately cooperate, and that takes time, right?
Absolutely. So as I pointed out, the 30 people that were indicted before, those were stepping stones that allowed the government to get the wiretaps to put together this massive RICO case against these 10 individuals in 2021. They're complicated cases. You have 10 defendants, which means 10 different legal defenses that are involved. It slows the process down. But by successfully eradicating or at least limiting this group and incapacitating them, keep in mind, when they were arrested in 21, they've been off the streets. That's why crime has come down over the last 4 years. And this is a never-ending process. The government's going to have to continue to monitor this group because they know from history they're not going to go away. There'll just be a vacuum created and new people will move into positions of leadership, and this will be likely to continue.
This is a classic example of selective incapacitation of an impact criminal and what the benefits are in the community when you get your hands around them and get them locked up. Got to get to a break. We are visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. When we come back, we'll talk about legislation relative to moving juvenile cases to criminal courts.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hey, everyone. Summer is just around the corner, and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high-quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafi's organization follows a lot of criminal justice legislation that moves through the legislative process in Baton Rouge. A lot of these bills have a significant impact on how we handle cases through the juvenile justice system as well as the adult court system as well. And there's been kind of marked differences of opinion about, you know, where we're going to draw the line on juvenile cases going to adult court or not. And there seems to be a series of bills addressing that this year, Rafi.
Right. So we've been talking for years about some of the problems with the juvenile justice system, the shroud of secrecy that veils the juvenile justice system. So there are 4 specialty juvenile courts in the state of Louisiana: Caddo Parish, which is the Shreveport area, Orleans, Jefferson, and East Baton Rouge Parish. I can speak to Orleans Parish. I'm not familiar or conversant with some of the issues involving Caddo or East Baton Rouge, but I am familiar with what's going on in New Orleans and Jefferson, as are you. So the problem perceived and identified by the authors of this legislation is some of these specialty court juvenile judges don't really see these offenders progress from juvenile offenders to adult offenders. Every other district court in the state of Louisiana doesn't have specialty juvenile judges. So that means that when a judge is elected to the district court, they're responsible for handling juvenile cases, adult criminal cases, civil cases, and family law cases. So they handle a general docket that includes all of this. So this legislation is largely identifying what has been perceived as a problem with specialized juvenile judges. They don't really see how the failure of the juvenile justice system, and particularly the judges' sentencing and handling of some of these young, repeat, and violent offenders, how being lenient may not do a favor to the public, but also to the offenders that they're attempting to help with all of this, because the lack of consequences imposed in some of these juvenile specialty courts don't alter the behavior of these offenders. And as they age into adults, they're coming back into the system as violent and repeat offenders. So if some of these cases were handled more appropriately as a juvenile, then some of these individuals may not have advanced and may not be facing lengthy sentences, including life imprisonment as 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. So what this legislation is proposing to do is to transfer cases involving juvenile offenders older than 15, and they're charged with a delinquent felony act to the district court. So in Orleans Parish, you've got criminal district court. They handle all the adult cases. Last week, we talked about the backlog of cases that are building up there. So what this legislation will do will be in Caddo Parish, in Jefferson Parish, in East Baton Rouge Parish, and, of course, Orleans Parish. It will transfer to the district court, adult court, the responsibility for handling juvenile delinquent offenses for people that are young offenders charged with a felony under age 15. So that would add to the dockets of the district court judges in those jurisdictions. So we know that because these would still be juvenile cases, there are certain requirements under the law with limiting the public's access to this activity and in processing of cases. So that means that each one of these judges would have to devote, you know, a day of their docket to juvenile cases in addition to all their other work. So in jurisdictions like Jefferson Parish, where they have an effective juvenile court system, there really is no complaints about the way that Jefferson Parish operates that. That would essentially lump them into this legislation, which means that cases are being handled effectively and efficiently in Jefferson Parish Juvenile Court, would now be thrust upon the judges in the district court in Jefferson Parish, causing backlogs and delays with their responsibilities. So while I agree with the identification of a problem in Orleans Parish, I'm not conversant with what the issues are in Caddo or East Baton Rouge, but I know just looking at New Orleans and in Jefferson Parish, you have a dichotomy there. And while there are documented problems with respect to the way that juvenile judges in New Orleans are handling their responsibilities, I don't believe that the best solution is to shift their dockets or a substantial portion of their dockets to the district court judges in Orleans Parish, because it will only add to the backlog of cases and add to further delays. And essentially, you are rewarding the juvenile court judges that right now aren't overworked with even less responsibility, all in the name of public safety. And I think that the better way to address this would be to change some of the secrecy, some of the confidentiality rules that shroud juvenile court to allow for more transparency and accountability for the way juvenile judges in these specialty courts are in fact handling their dockets and moving their dockets. You know, what was your experience with the Jefferson Parish Juvenile Court, Newell?
Well, you know, my viewpoint of all of this is that if we want to dabble with appointed judges, I think this is the best place to do it, in juvenile courts, specialty courts. And if we're really serious about juvenile justice and trying to impact kids' lives, trying to turn them around and everything else, we should have more than just four specialty courts in the state of Louisiana, right? The reality is that we don't run a juvenile justice system. We don't have one. We have our toe in the water. It's anything but a system. And that is a problem, in my view. When you go to states that have the most successful programs, Nebraska, the Carolinas, there are a couple of others. There are even some in California that are well operated. The fact of the matter is that it's a if X then Y system. There's no discretion. They set up a template. They have a matrix. If you do X, you get Y. And you don't get out of that jurisdiction of that court until you complete Y. Whatever the programs and everything else that you have to go through. I visited those systems many, many years ago, and everybody talked about it. We imploded the incarceration at the state level. Mitch Landrieu did that when he was a lieutenant governor, in advance of putting all these measures in that we were going to adopt the Nebraska model. Well, we never did. We took pieces and parts of it because elected judges did not want to get rid of their discretion, because they leverage their discretion for the benefit of getting reelected. And we got to move away from that, quite frankly. We have to just blow this system up and start over again, because this one's not working. I had frustrations with juvenile court in Jefferson over the years. I mean, I had defendants that had cut off electronic monitors 11, 12, 13 times. How many chances are we going to give a kid? We have to know when to say no. We have to have an exit strategy, because the one certainty that we have is we don't have enough money. We don't have the assets or resources to continue to play this silly-ass game with these kids. And unless and until we get to the point where they understand that we are serious about what our approach is going to be and what we're going to do, does anybody believe for a moment that they're going to change their behavior? I don't. There are many success stories there, but there are also many failures. And I think the best way, you said it earlier, to judge the effectiveness of anything that we're doing in the juvenile arena is 2 years post-adulthood. And let's go look and see where those individuals are. And if they're in the penitentiary, we have failed. And if a large percentage of these kids are in a penitentiary, we have totally failed. And we need to rethink, re-engineer what we're doing in order to make a bigger difference in their lives. But we don't do that either. Why? Because we fear the outcome. We know it's going to be abysmal. We actually did studies in Jefferson Parish, the JPSO, to make our case that we're not being successful at that time. I'm 8 years removed come September, so I don't know exactly what it is now. I know what it was 8 years ago, and although the system, they minded the P's and Q's, still, the overall mindset is that we're going to be able to rehabilitate every child, and that's just not true. We need to allocate our resources where we're going to get the biggest oomph for our dollar and a return on our investment. Got to get to a break.
Since the dawn of Major League Baseball, Every player has honed their unique skills.
Judge, drill deep to left.
Ohtani connects and it's gone.
Skeen strikes out the side.
Bobby Witt Jr. throws in time.
Harper does it again.
Witness the hills of the game in ballparks nationwide. Get your tickets today at MLB.com/tickets. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sarah. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning. Because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Be right back. Welcome back. We're visiting with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafael, I mean, that was a long roundabout explanation of where I am on this issue. But I just really believe that we just have our toe in the water as it relates to juvenile justice. And unless and until we get to a different model, I don't think any of this changes. And
I agree. So one of the examples that I put together to talk about to maybe drive home to the audience the problem. So there was a 13-year-old by the name of Lionel Reynolds that was arrested and prosecuted as a juvenile in New Orleans for paralyzing a 20-year-old during a failed armed robbery attempt. Mm-hmm. He was sentenced to juvenile life, which means age 21. But the judge allowed him to earn his way out of that life sentence with good conduct. So the victim's family was asked whether they agreed to allowing him to earn early release, and they agreed in principle. Until they found out while he was in pretrial custody, he had escaped a number of times and also was involved in violent offenders involving other incarcerated juvenile offenders. And when they found out about it, they opposed his early release and implored the judge not to release him to the public. The judge didn't listen to those objections, nor to the objections of the district attorney. And this offender was assigned to work at or be in an satellite facility in Lake Charles, where they basically walked away and escaped. So yeah. The judge, in letting this offender go into a step-down facility that he was there on his own recognizance, essentially, he decided to escape. His school teacher from New Orleans loaned him his car. He fled to San Antonio. The U.S. Marshal Service had to go out and arrest him. So since he escaped from a facility in Calcasieu Parish as a 20-year-old, he was prosecuted as an adult and got an additional 5 years as an adult. So the judge in New Orleans that allowed him and ignored the fact that he had been a violent offender while in custody, had escaped two prior times, allowed him to go to a non-secure facility in Calcasieu Parish, where he escaped again as an adult, serving his juvenile life sentence. So the judge in New Orleans did no favors to that 13-year-old that she was hoping to rehabilitate with a very lenient sentence, ignoring the fact that he had been arrested for crimes of violence while in state custody in Jefferson Parish, and escaping from that Jefferson Parish facility, not once but twice, and put him in a non-secure facility where he escaped a third time. So not only is he serving a five-year sentence, but the school teacher that aided and abetting him in escaping is also being prosecuted for assisting in his escape. So that's the motivation for some of this legislation. And I think that the problem that, you know, this identifies is not fixed by transferring the responsibility for these cases to another judge. I think it's fixed by having a more qualified juvenile judiciary and removing some of the secrecy that shrouds these cases and allowing for more accountability and transparency for the actions of juvenile judges when they ignore their responsibility, not just to the public, but also to the offenders that they're attempting to help with lenient but misguided penalties that set them up for failure and endanger the public through the recidivism of offenders that haven't been adequately rehabilitated yet.
Misguided judgment in the exercise of discretion. And, you know, that's why these models that are out there that are if X, then Y, they seem to work a lot better. You don't have the argument about disproportionate impact, disproportionate enforcement. It doesn't matter, you know, your gender, your race, or anything else. If X, then Y. If you don't accomplish Y, you stay in the system. And there are accelerated sanctions for not accomplishing the milestones that are required of these individual defendants. And I did want to real quickly, the Orleans Parish Sheriff's Office millage renewal. I came out the other day and said this is important that we vote on this and that we renew it. Because in my mind, I've run a jail. Without these dollars, this is going to be a real difficult thing. And our arrest rates are only as good as the rest of the system. And if we can't lock away the impact criminal waiting for trial, we're in trouble. Your thoughts real quick.
Well, I agree. So this millage is not a new tax as some of the signage that's been up opposing it. So this is a millage that produces about $13 million in operating support for the sheriff's office. If this millage is not renewed, it means that the city is going to have to fund out of their general fund the operations of the sheriff's office, which means that that $13 million is going to be siphoned away from other city projects and other city agencies. So this is something that started back in 2014, the public approved it, and they've subsequently approved it multiple times. So this is not a new tax. This is absolutely necessary. And if you don't maintain that jail is a concentration of the most violent and dangerous offenders in the state of Louisiana, including Angola, because you've got about 1,400 pretrial inmates. Two-thirds of them are in there for felony crimes of violence or felony weapons offenses, and they're all waiting to be adjudicated for their crimes. If they weren't behind bars, if they weren't put there by the police department, prosecuted by the DA's office, they would be out on the streets, and our crime rate would be much higher than it is today. So this is critically important to public safety going forward. This is not a new tax. And this is something that, as you pointed out, the public needs to get out to the polls and vote on.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the time, the insight, the accommodation for today. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll be right back.